Sox Central Monday. It's Dan Riccio, Bick Nizar here in the Kintech studio. Kintech Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. This hour of Canuck Central is brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Fast lunch doesn't have to mean fast food. Satisfy your midday cravings by choosing a main side and drink for only $15, served in 20 minutes or less. A lot to get to today. But first, we'll address why Bick is here. Because you're here more than Sat or I are these days.
Yeah.
You were in for me on Friday. Now yeah. You're in for Sat today.
You had a good reason, though.
I did. I spent the weekend in beautiful Harrison Hot Springs, yeah. Actually.
Sat, not so much.
Yeah.
Sat is just...
Sat's just unwell.
Yeah.
He's not feeling well.
Actually, he's unwell. He's just...
Yeah.
Unlucky. Unlucky over the weekend.
We wish him a speedy recovery.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting times with the Stanley Cup playoffs, as a lot happened over the last couple of days. Mikko Rantanen continues to be a star. The Leafs continue to leaf quite a bit. And that's really, I guess, what we all should have expected, to be quite honest. But in the way that it happened last night, kind of depressing if you're a Leaf fan, I'm sure. Auston Matthews has now played 9 playoff games against the Florida Panthers, has not scored a goal in any of them. And then there's the Dallas game where Mikko Rantanen is just like the greatest playoff player of all time.
He's unreal.
At another 3-point night. And the winning goal was about as controversial a goal as you'll get.
I love it. Honestly...
Like, Bick just came into the office today. He's like, can we talk about Alex Petrovic?
It's one of my favorite goals.
It's like, sure, the Man United guy wants to talk about a kicked-in goal.
It's a controversial goal, right?
Yeah.
It is not pretty by any means. But this goal has got, like, every element of, like, peak hockey here. And I know, like, there's been goals of, like, Mario. Like,
wow, how much randomness had to happen in this one play?
Like, again, Mario split defenders and Bobby Orr's soared through the air and Pavel Bure has gone skate to stick. But this one it's a perfect NHL goal.
Is it?
It's a weird bounce, which
I would say it's not perfect, considering not everybody believes it should have been called a goal.
Okay, but in real time when you watched it,
yes.
Did you think, oh, that's a kick? You just thought, oh, weird bounce.
Yeah.
And we go, oh, that's hockey. That's,
yes.
That's what hockey is.
Yes.
And then there's a review. We're like, oh, review? We got to go to the rule book. And then we have this convoluted process of like, wait, if it goes a distinct kicking motion, it goes off a goalie, we get to argue with the rules.
Yes.
And guess what? Everyone's right. Mm-hmm. And everyone's wrong. It's the perfect NHL goal. It's a weird bounce. And everyone gets, like, both fan bases are yelling at each other. Everyone's got their own interpretation of the rule, yelling at each other.
Every Stars fan thinks it's a good goal. Every Jets fan thinks it's not a good goal. Neutral fans are split on the matter.
I'm willing to be talking to either side of it. I see it from both sides. I think it should be a goal. I do think it like nicks Petrovic's stick as well.
Well, but I think that's what he's trying to kick it up to his stick.
Yeah, but
he doesn't complete the play.
He's a 7th D man, not a Hart Trophy winner. And it looks a little odd. But like I think to me that's a goal. But from different angles, I can totally see why it shouldn't and why it should be a goal from every different angle.
I just want to know why the NHL went full MLS on this and just like started making up their own rules for the situation, because the rule book says if it deflects off the goalie's stick, then it should not be a good goal. But instead of the way they described the goal, it didn't deflect. Hellebuck propelled it.
Yeah.
So the difference between the word deflect and propel is the entire reason behind why this was considered a good goal from the National Hockey League versus not.
Can we ask ChatGPT what is the difference between deflect and propelled?
I think we might have to. Let's bring in our first guest on the afternoon. It is our Monday Hockey Insider, Frank Saravalli, joining us as he always does. He has a presentation of Angry Otter Liquor. Thanks for this, Frank. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you guys holding up?
We're doing pretty well. Settle a debate. Should the Alex Petrovic goal been allowed last night?
I think it should have been. I mean, look, when you get to, I firmly believe that as soon as the referees put the headset on, that should begin a 3-minute countdown clock. And if you can't come up with an answer in that 3-minute period of time, then the goal needs to be ruled whatever was on the ice, because it's inconclusive. By definition, inconclusive. When you get to 7 7.5 minutes, you can play the entire Freebird song in the Dallas arena. Like, we've jumped the shark. This has gone too far. And only for the NHL to rule eventually anyway that Connor Hellebuck propelled the puck into his own net. Well, if that was the case, why did we just spend the first 6+ minutes figuring out whether or not Petrovic kicked it?
Yeah, if like the way everyone reacted to, like in real time watching it, it's like, okay, it went in. It didn't occur to me that it was a kicking motion until it went to review. And you just kind of go through that whole sequence. It's like, it just felt like a goal and it looked like a goal. I totally understand the argument and I totally understand like the way the rule is written, and it shouldn't be a goal, but it does speak to a bigger issue to me. Like, it does feel like officiating has become such a conversation here. And as you just outlined, if the way it was presented to the in-house crowd there of why it's a goal, that seems like it should have been obvious off the first replay.
I'm with you. And I understand why the Jets are upset, because such a high-stakes moment in the game. But they also they melted down after that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and look, I know that Scott Arneil acknowledged part of that too, and it kind of made it a moot point. But, like, here's the thing. When we've arrived at the moment in time where the guy who scores the goal in Petrovic needs to get off the bench and go take a twirl during the review because he sat for too long, it's too much.
Is there a bigger conversation coming about officiating in general? And it's not just so much, oh, like, officials make mistakes, but operationally and, like, procedurally, I do feel like there's, like, a lot of mistakes that happen. We've seen it here in Vancouver of assessing penalties that aren't there and trying to sort that out. It seems like some of the basics are being missed right now.
I'm with you, and I think the issue in a big way is inexperience. And look at any NHL game you watch. I don't know what it was like for you as a kid, but for me, watching, anytime I'd hear the announcers or broadcasters name the officials, they were all guys that we knew, and like, you might not have loved them, but you knew all their names.
I had hockey Koharski, cards of the officials.
Yeah, Koharski, Van Massenhoven, Magoo. Like, I could name a billion of these guys that you loved them or you hated them or whatever it was. You knew who they were, at least. Outside of, like, Wes McCauley, Chris Rooney, I mean, this isn't a knock on any of them. Name for me the other guys.
Yeah.
You know why you can't? It's because all the guys that are older were forced into retirement, and all the guys that are younger now, well, like, in any turnover in any business is natural from one generation to the next.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is they took a bunch of former players that played either, you know, brief cups of coffee in the NHL or AHL and ECHL guys and said, hey, your career is kind of over. Would you like to be a referee? And we'll fast track you to the NHL. And these guys go from never having called any game at any point in their life to all of a sudden refereeing an NHL preseason game. And then they get worked into NHL games. And the problem with that is you miss out on so much experiential knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Not only that, you know, what comes from refereeing thousands of minor hockey games and on your way up through the junior ranks and spending your time living out of your car, at the same time that those guys are getting fast-tracked and missing out on that, there's a whole other generation of players or minor hockey officials trying to rise through the junior rank that see themselves getting passed over and say, why on earth am I living out of my car making no money when I could go get a real job if I'm going to get passed over anyway? And those guys, the career officials, also begin to fall off the map. And you run into this crisis where everyone's looking at it going, hey, we're missing basics. Why aren't these things being covered? Because these guys don't really have experience.
I think our listeners will be upset if we don't mention Kelly Sutherland, the most hated referee in all of Vancouver. But I think you're spot on about this. And the other part about, especially in the playoffs, I know refs and officials they want to kind of stay out of the way. But sometimes when they do that, you know, they don't call a penalty when it's clearly a penalty. By trying to do too little, you're actually making more of an effect on the game at times. And I think that plays a big part in it too.
Dan, that brings us so perfectly to Graham Skillitar and the stick tap from Mason Marchment this weekend.
Yeah.
And I think he's now put his fellow officials in a really intriguing spot. In his report post-game, he felt that the tap from Marchment did not rise to the level of abuse of officials. I don't think anyone likes the precedent. I don't think anyone likes the look of it. And I believe there's a pretty strong consensus from people behind the scenes that they wonder if this should have been a suspension. But now what happens to the next official that says, hey, yeah, that did cross the line for me? Is that guy going to be made out to be soft? Is that guy going to be made out to be a guy that's jumping over the line? I get that what's done and said on the ice stays as part of that group, and there's a special omerta that exists between players, coaches, and officials that what's said in that arena stays there. But, man, I think that's a really tough look for the whole league.
Yeah, tough precedent to set there. And every situation is unique, but I can't imagine every official would have been okay with that situation playing out the way that it did. Frank Saravalli, our guest. So Canucks seem to be moving along in their coaching search as Marco Sturm's name popped up last week. We know Manny Malhotra is going to be part of the shortlist. What are you hearing on the Canucks as they start to zero in on potential candidates?
Yeah, I think it's been a really interesting process in general, I'd say, around the league. Obviously, I'd expect Adam Foote's name to be on that list. I don't know if it's on the short list, but definitely was on the longer one. And I think the expectation was that it's always tough with these. There's so many going on at the same time. Have they interviewed? Did they have a conversation? I know guys that had Zoom interviews and then they say, well, that doesn't really count. It wasn't a real interview. And it's like, all right, well, let me know which one's real and which one's fake, because you can get gobbled up in the nuance of it all. I'd be very surprised if they didn't spend time talking to Adam Foote. I think in a lot of ways, Jay Woodcroft makes a ton of sense, not just from having coached in a Canadian market with a superstar or two superstars in McDavid and Draisaitl, but also having spent 16 years in division. NHL head coach, NHL assistant coach with the Oilers and Sharks, and then AHL assistant coach in that division. I think a very important mindset and experience that's in his resume that would make a ton of sense for the Canucks. That said, hard to say exactly where it stands, although we understand that it's moving forward. And I think there's so many other people or teams that are waiting on the guy that left Vancouver, and that's Rick Tocchet.
What's his status right now? I know you featured on TNT here, but, you know, we've talked about like the coaching market this year can be pretty decent, and yet it doesn't feel like the job market is pretty decent. And is that playing a role in maybe Rick Tocchet's decision making here?
I'd say it's definitely part of it. I mean, how could it not be? But in the end, there's still choice,
mm-hmm.
and there's massive term and dollars that are connected to some of these opportunities. And you know, everyone keeps saying, oh, well, wouldn't be shocked to see Rick Tocchet go back and do TV. Like, I mean, does he enjoy it? Obviously, the fact that he went back this weekend would indicate, yes, he does. But I just think the opportunity is going to be too great also from a financial perspective. I think Rick Tocchet, if he doesn't already, has multiple offers on the table, with significant term and real big dollars that are attached to it. So I mentioned before that it didn't all, you know, come down to every dollar for the Vancouver Canucks and their situation, and that they made a great offer. And that was the risk here for Tocchet, is that, hey, maybe what's out there isn't better than what you're leaving behind. But I'm fairly certain from at least a financial perspective, it's better. And I think the fit, and to your point, Bick, the job itself,
mm-hmm.
you could make an argument that it could be better.
Like, I look at Boston, and they're similar. they're in a similar spot to where Vancouver is, kind of a bit in transition. You still have Pastrnak, you still have McAvoy, you still have Swayman, so you got a pretty good foundation, but you know, it doesn't feel like a team that's ready to be a true contender in the East after everything that happened this past season. And obviously the connection to Philly, but Philly to me looks like a team that needs to hire the guy before they get their real guy right now, Frank. Like that's it doesn't feel like that's the spot Rick Tocchet ultimately wants to be in this very moment.
It's kind of hard to say, right? Because beauty's in the eye of the beholder. There's different nuances to this that I think you might have left a couple important things out. Not that you intended to be all-encompassing, but Boston is a bounce-back candidate. You know, you can say what you want about some of the free agent signings that they made, essentially taking some pieces off the Canucks' hands, or the trades that they made at the deadline, but Jeremy Swayman should be theoretically much better next year. And you've got a top 10 defenseman in Charlie McAvoy, and David Pastrnak is one of the true play-driving wingers in the league. So there's three important positional boxes checked, and you've got an ownership group and management group that's hungry to win in an original six market. Pretty special opportunity. In Philadelphia, it's different. You need more long-term vision, but there's also a comfort of what feels like home and an organization where he's played such a huge role in and is in the Hall of Fame, on top of the connection to the front office with a really tight friendship with Keith Jones. So, like, I think there's lots of different parts of these jobs that some of them on the surface, you say, oh, there's some warts on this one. Nothing is without its flaws. It's like any kid trying to pick a university or whatever it might be, you're doing a pro and con list on either side of the paper trying to make a decision here. And I think they've got different things going for them that really make them each attractive on their own.
Just going back to Vancouver, just your sense of how robust this coaching search is, right? Because we were talking about on Friday that when they made the switch from Bruce to Rick, you know, they had their guy, they waited it out, and they made it work to get Rick. This is a different opportunity for them that they are exploring the entire coaching market. How robust is it? And also, are they shopping at a higher end? Because they were willing to spend close to $20 million total money on Rick Tocchet. Are they still going to consider that type of money or pay a high end coach? Or are they shopping near the lower end of the financial market?
It certainly sounds like from the candidates that have been listed that it's toward the lower end. And I don't think that's necessarily because the Canucks are trying to do this in a cheap manner or cheap way. I think it comes back to a lot of what we've talked about since Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin's first press conference wrapping up the season. This is a time of transition. The Canucks, what you see moving forward may not be what you see on paper right now. And with that, you mentioned the idea in Philadelphia of you got to get someone before you get to Rick Tocchet. Well, maybe there's something to be said about the position that the Canucks are looking at right now, because this is a time of transition, that you go with an up-and-comer. You go with a creative guy that maybe you can – a creative hire that maybe you can mold into your next permanent long-term head coach. And if not, when you finally get the roster from a personnel perspective to the place that you want it to be, then you can bring in that next highly paid, influential, Stanley Cup champion, you know, great pedigreed head coach that – I just don't know that the Canucks necessarily really need right now, given where they're at.
I know a lot of our listeners were surprised at Marco Sturm's name entering the chat for the next head coaching position here in Vancouver. But he's kind of been around it for a while. I think he was one of the final candidates for San Jose. He's being linked to Boston as well. He's been with the Ontario Reign for a few years now. This is a guy that's been on the come up in coaching circles for a while now.
Yeah, I think highly respected. I think one of those players, too, that you think back to that really was a high IQ player. And I think it all comes down to experience. He was like one of those, you know, hot shot, just coming over from Europe coaches that a lot of people were like, man, this guy could be the next it guy. And it took an assistant coaching role. It took a head coach in the AHL role and time spent trying to, you know, get in front of all those things to gain the experience necessary. It's such a key facet of our entire conversation tonight. really about trying to find that in the most authentic way. And so totally makes sense that he's a guy that the Canucks would be interested in talking to. And I think a younger guy that has spent a lot of time around this generation of player that really gets how to connect with them, and that's going to be really important. I think Manny Malhotra is in the same category as well.
It does seem, too, that the teams that are looking for guys all feel kind of in that transition phase. Obviously, if you fire your head coach, you're in that spot. But, like, Sullivan quickly attached himself to New York. Quenneville gets a hire. And they're still, you know, Rick Tocchet, we'll see what happens. But it does feel like a lot of the teams are kind of looking for the same style of coach. So does that mean, like, the retread guys are, like, the Tortorellas and Jeff Blashills and Gerard Gallant are going to get looked over in this cycle?
Well, I think the big question that I've had for them, Bic, has been how much do they want to keep going? You know, you've got Gerard Gallant or Peter Laviolette or John Tortorella, guys that have been there, done that, with the exception of Gallant, have won a Stanley Cup. Gallant's coached in a Stanley Cup final. Like, there's lots of different they've also made piles of money.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think for some of them, one of the best courses of action, why don't you sit out for a little bit? Like, Peter Laviolette has been a head coach, I think, consecutively for 25 seasons now. There hasn't been one part of one season that he hasn't been a coach of. And that part, not to say that's a bad thing, but it feels like wash, rinse, and repeat at times. You know, you just trade out one windbreaker for another, clean out your closet of all your Washington Capitals gear or New York Rangers gear, and you move on to whatever the next team is. And you drop it off at the thrift store, and that's that. I think in this case, maybe there's some perspective. Take some time to your – not saying he needs it, but I don't think it could do anyone any harm to take a step back and figure out, hey, why was this tenure so short with the Rangers, 2 years? What is something that I could do differently? How can I reinvent myself? Can I spend time learning and watching around the league? I think all really important questions that at this juncture of their careers are fair to ask.
I know your latest top 50 free agents list came out at Daily Faceoff today, and I look at it, and every time I look at it, Frank, it's a little underwhelming for a Canucks team that's looking to add this summer. And heck, there's a lot of money floating around the league this summer, right? With the cap going up and teams looking to spend. But I look at it, and Mitch Marner's at the top. Still a debate of whether or not he gets there. And then you get down to Brock Besser, and you know, by the projections you guys have listed here, Besser might be among the most total value money of any forward that is available on free agent day, July 1st.
I think he's going to be the second highest paid player in total dollars. I mean, that's at least according to the projections.
Yeah.
And I think a good case for that, particularly in the goal scoring department. I mean, how many guys on that list can you consistently look at and say, hey, they've got a real authentic chance to score 30? And it's not just score 30, it's do they have 40 goal potential? And I think the answer for a lot of those guys is no. And so there's lots of different players available. You mentioned that you think this crop is a little bit thin. It started potentially as one of the best ever.
Yeah.
We've seen guys knocked off here and there. You know, think about the start of the season and some of the contracts that were signed. Jake Ottinger, et cetera, Shesterkin. It was or had the potential to be a fascinating class, and yet we've still got some guys who can be difference makers. John Tavares is still on the board, and Dan Bennett and Brad Marchand and Brock Nelson. Like, there's lots of different guys that are out there, but in the last 3 weeks since I've done this, my last ranking, there was five other players that were taken off the board that were extended. So how many more between now and July 1st? I'd have to imagine at least a handful more. So the class or crop gets kind of thinner by the day.
What's your initial sense of what the spending will be like? Because the initial pushback of what the cap number was going to be was, well, not every team is going to be prepared to spend to the cap, and yet there's still going to be over $700 million in cap space come July 1. We'll see how much gets eaten away with RFAs and everything. But is there going to be a lot of motivation from teams to spend?
I think it's difficult to judge that because on the one hand, a lot of the teams that I talked to that were in transition to the earlier part of our conversation, like take a team like the Montreal Canadiens, for instance, have cap space, willing to spend it, could even put Carey Price on LTIR for the right player, and yet they want to try and be really measured. The Calgary Flames, they had the most cap space in the league last year. These teams aren't going to be going out and spending on players and giving out eight-year deals for guys that are going to age poorly. It's just not a world that they're going to see themselves operating in. And then you try and balance that with, listen to Anaheim Ducks owner Henry Samueli last week when they announced Joel Quenneville as their next head coach. He said, I was willing to write the check for Joel because I believe he's the caliber of coach that we need to help take us to the next level. And he said, I'm encouraging Pat Verbeek. I'll write a similar check in the summer for players who can be difference makers. How many of those guys are available? How many will consider the Anaheim Ducks? All different questions, but there's money to be spent. There's definitely, you know, players that are available. Do those two things marry up with each other?
Frank, we appreciate the time as always. Thanks for this.
Thank you, guys. Have a good one.
There is Frank Saravalli joining us here on Canucks Central. He is a presentation of Angry Otter Liquor. Save on your next visit to Angry Otter Liquor. This month, save when you buy White Claw Vodka Smash, Tequila Smash, and Gin Smash, 8-packs. And find more at angryotterliquor.ca. It's interesting. We got this text here. If Brock is top of the list for free agents, why couldn't the Canucks have traded him at the deadline? They could, should probably have traded him. Certainly in hindsight, they should have traded him. But value is also different at the deadline than it is in free agency. And
well, the team that might be willing to pay him big bucks may not have been in a position to give up a first round pick.
There was only a handful of teams willing to spend big assets at the deadline this year, as there is every year. And those teams prioritized other things rather than Brock Besser. And I think it comes down to simply that. You know, the Avalanche prioritized Brock Nelson. That's what they wanted to spend a first-round pick on. Other teams just prioritize certain things. And generally, wingers of Brock's ilk, as rentals, don't go for first-round draft choices. So that's really what it comes down to. But he could still very well be the top rated free agent when we get to July 1.
For instance, like the Anaheim Ducks makes a lot of sense if they're going to be spenders in free agency. If certainly we'll have the opportunity to do, as Frank was just mentioning there too. But like they were in a position to make a trade to go get a guy.
It's an interesting spot for Brock Besser coming this summer. And that's the bet he's making by not taking the $40 million the Canucks put to him earlier this year. Coming up, we're going to get into the Canucks coaching search a little bit deeper and more on the Stanley Cup playoffs. You are listening to Canucks Central.